The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on September 28, 1985 in New Orleans, Louisiana. The class begins with a reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ancha Lila, Chapter 3, Text 142-164.
Approached Haridas Thakur and being offered 1,000 gold coins by Ramchandra Khan, and how she was made a devotee. So this is describing what happened after that. Translation: she worshipped the Tulsi plant, following the footsteps of her spiritual master. Instead of eating regularly, she chewed whatever food she received as alms, and if nothing was supplied, she would fast. Thus, by eating frugally and fasting, she conquered her senses. And as soon as her senses were conquered, were controlled, symptoms of love of God had appeared in her person. It's important to note that if you want to experience love of God, you have to control the senses. It's like they say, you can't have your cake and eat it too. The person who's got uncontrolled senses, and they're not going to be able to simultaneously experience love from God. If one has to very strictly follow the orders of the spiritual master, just as she followed the orders of her spiritual master, orders may differ from one person to the next slightly. But if one is always performing one's devotional service in the attitude of service, not as a karma yoga where one does what one wants to do and then offers the fruits to the Lord, that it will not produce love for Godhead. That may give one liberation, it may free one from the material world. And if one wants to get pure love for Godhead, one has to act and surrender devotional service where one is unconditionally performing devotional service. And, of course, in ISKCON, it's very important. Prabhupada was very merciful because, of course, he had thousands and thousands of disciples. And so it wasn't possible for him to personally give each disciple a devotional service. But he was kind that he said that, well, in the administration, there's GBCs, there's temple presidents, that whatever service they give, that he accepts that, that they're acting as representatives on his behalf, and that can be taken as a is being given by himself, unless of course he's already given some specific devotional service to some devotee. So, in this way, ISKCON grew from just a seed to a worldwide organization, because everyone was serving on the basis of this principle of serving the spiritual master. And Prabhupada said, this is the secret of the expansion of the Krishna conscious movement, And our basic principle is that we do everything as a servant of the Lord. Our basic principle is devotional service to the spiritual master. Therefore, we in ISKCON, we sing in the morning prayer, Samsara Dhamanala. We don't imitate other Gaudiya Mads and other groups. They don't sing Samsara Dhamanala in the morning prayer. They have another thing there, which we sing, for instance, at Vrindavan, because we do two groups, which is one for Prabhupada Samadhi, one for the temple. So they sing the other, so they sing that. Divavadi Sesha Loka Kulesha, whatever, there's one song like that. We don't imitate other organizations, we don't care even what other organizations do or don't do. We're just following Srila Prabhupada's formula, because by following his formula, we are guaranteed to be successful. I don't know what they did in the time of Bhakti Siddhanta or something else. Don't even care to know. I know that Prabhupada is the most expert doctor, whatever he's prescribed for us, that's the best medicine. And as soon as we deviate from his prescription and we start to concoct and make our own formulas, God forbid what's going to be the result. And here we can see how this prostitute, she followed the prescriptions of Haridas Thakur. And as a result, she was able to control her senses. And she achieved love for Godhead, even though, of course, she was in a woman's body. Prasiddha Vaishnaviya Vrido Parama Mohanti Guru Guru Vaishnava Tardashane Tejanti. Translation. Thus the prostitute became a celebrated devotee. She became very bad from spiritual life, and many stalwart Vaishnavas would come to see her. Translation, repetition. Thus the prostitute became a celebrated devotee. She became very bad
in
spiritual life.
And
many stalwart Vaishnavas
would
come to see her.
Report.
Stalwart, highly advanced Vaishnava devotees are not interested in seeing prostitutes. When a prostitute or any other fallen soul becomes a Vaishnava, stalwart Vaishnavas are interested in seeing them. Anyone can be turned into a Vaishnava if he or she follows the Vaishnava principles. A devotee who follows these principles is no longer on the material platform. Therefore, it's one's strict adherence to the principles that should be considered, not the country of one's birth. Many devotees join our Krishna conscious movement from Europe and America, but one should not therefore consider them European Vaishnavas or American Vaishnavas. The Vaishnava is a Vaishnava and should therefore be given all the respect due a Vaishnava. The very important points. Chaitanya Charitamrita is the postgraduate study of Krishna conscious philosophy. Mr. Jagat Madai, they may have been very sinful persons, but once they surrendered to Lord Chaitanya, they were considered Vaishnavas and they were respected by all the Vaishnavas. Even the Western world, irregardless of what one had done in their previous life before becoming a devotee, certainly in the present state of the Kali Yuga, people do so many sinful activities which are beyond mention. But once they're a Vaishnava, then they're respected as a Vaishnava. You don't consider a person either by their nationality or by their color or by their previous sinful activities. A Vaishnava is a Vaishnava. That's all we consider. And therefore, everyone is to be offered due respect to Vaishnava. Actually, the Krishna conscious movement is supposed to be Vaikuntha, where people in Vaikuntha, everyone has love for Krishna and mutual respect for all the other Vaishnavas. And that is what the secret is of maintaining my Vaikuntha mood, is to respect all of the Vaishnavas as being devotees of the Lord, therefore they are exalted. Nothing is small, just like there's that one verse of some of the Tarot or something wrote about the Gita. Nothing small and diminutive. Vaishnavas are like that. There's no Vaishnava who's not great. Because the quality of being a pure devotee, the quality of being a Vaishnava itself is so great that there are unlimited good qualities one can see. Text 142. Translation. Seeing the sublime character of the prostitute, everyone was astonished. Everyone glorified the influence of Haridas Thakur and offered him obeisance. Translation. Seeing the sublime character of the prostitute, everyone was astonished. Everyone glorified the influence of Haridas Thakur and offered him obeisance. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is said, Palena Purichiyate, one is recognized by the results of his actions. In Vaishnava society, there are many types of Vaishnavas. Some of them are called Goswami, some are called Swami, some are Prabhus, and some are Prabhupada. One is not recognized, however, simply by such a name. A spiritual master recognizes an actual guru when it is seen that he has changed the character of his disciples. Haridas Thakur actually changed the character of the professional prostitute. People greatly appreciated this, and therefore they all offered obeisances to Haridas Thakur and glorified him. It's just like a kind of a focus. In the shortwave radio, they have a setting, you can turn it ahead at 1,000 hertz, 100 hertz, or 10 hertz, or 1 hertz, one like wave. Depending how you set the dial, it goes ahead 100 at a time, 10 at a time. It's like the Bhagavad Gita kind of gives an overview, just like every 1,000 hertz or something, the main points. There's a spiritual world, there's a spirit soul, there's all kinds. And then you get the Bhagavatam that goes into it in much greater detail. Telling who's the devotee, what's the relation to the devotee, different types of relationships, so on. Qualities of the spiritual person, we have more qualities of the spiritual world, more qualities of the material world. Then you get in here into the Chaitanya Charita, and then it takes a particular subject and it really dissects, it really goes into it, so we can thoroughly realize the subject matter. Just like, and we know there are many types of Vaishnavas. Some of them may be called Goswamis, Swamis, Prabhus. Some of them may be called Prabhupads. So, even in India, sometimes you find that, like in Navadvip, they call every guru as a Prabhupada. You see, there was a time when Sometimes people are not gracious and they don't. Some certain godbrothers in Srila Prabhupada, they objected that Prabhupada was called Prabhupada, and Bhakti Siddhanta was called Prabhupada. But because Prabhupada was starting, was called Prabhupada by the disciples, and because they actually had saved so many fallen souls, printed so many books, so he himself, in his humility, felt that he was called by Bhakti Siddhanta, and therefore, if his disciples wanted to call him Prabhupada, there was nothing wrong with that. So, then he would tell, you know, when they come and say, why are you allowing yourself to be called Prabhupada, as if it was like reserved. And he said, well, there are so many other people, they're all called Prabhupada. And now we have other places. So, my disciples call me Prabhupada, who was the higher. A real Vaishnava should see the qualities in another Vaishnava. So when Prabhupada had made so many devotees as Vaishnavas, that shouldn't be taken as a material quality. Sometimes in ISKCON, because Prabhupada had appointed different disciples rather than appointed, but he ordered them to take up the responsibility of initiating new disciples and perpetuating the sampradaya. And of course it was up to them to qualify themselves, not that just by the order that by the order they could act, but the proof of whether they are really spiritual masters would be in their preaching and in their following, not simply that by the order alone. By the order alone, what they are qualified in the sense that they have the order to act. Then we see that things like what Srila Bhaktipada has done in New Vrindavan, building Prabhupada's palace, inspiring the devotees, purifying so many devotees. What so many different devotees are doing, whether they're spiritual masters, or whether they're initiating saints, or whether they've been leaders. We can see when by their preaching they've been able to bring people to the path of Krishna consciousness. The etiquette exemplified here in the Chaitanya Charitamrita is that people would appreciate that. They would say, oh, that person is a great preacher. It's not that their Krishna conscious movement is devoid of great preachers. It has many great preachers who are actually expanding the Krishna consciousness movement. Not only the initiating spiritual masters, but there are so many empowered devotees are there. That's why they're being recognized more and more. But the proof will not be just because somebody gets a particular title, as a Prabhu, or as a Goswami, or even as a Guru. The real proof has to come from their preaching. That by their preaching, if they're able to inspire people to surrender to Krishna, to develop faith in Prabhupada, in the reciprocal succession, to become purified, that will be to their credit. And then Dashi Vaishnava should appreciate that quality. So that is the real thing that Prabhupada wanted. He asked the disciples, I want you to do something. What is that? He wanted us to deliver fallen souls. One time I was chanting 32 rounds a day, every day, sitting in the temple before I would go out. And Prabhupada saw that I was staying till a little later in the morning. And he said, what are you doing here? I said, Prabhupada, I'm chanting 32 rounds a day. So I'm finishing my rounds. He says, who told you to do that? It's my order. If you don't chant more than 16 rounds, you chant 16 rounds and go out and preach. If you just sit here chanting your 32 rounds, then who's going to go out and preach and deliver the fallen souls? I want you to go out and preach and to deliver the fallen souls and to save them from this life. Not simply sit and chant here in the temple. The problem wanted us to do something. One time I was in Mayapur, wrote me a letter and said, Mayapur is, the sitting in Mayapur is for the women and children to sit on the farm. You should go out and preach. Other women even who are preachers, whoever is a preacher, they should sit just on the farm. They should go out and preach. And by their preaching, they can bring people to Mayapur. They can bring people to the farm. They should go to the city. I mean, Indian women are in a different role. Actually, in the West, the women are themselves great preachers. I mean, in India, to a large degree, the women don't have that kind of self, I don't know what it is, that quality of being able to go out and preach on their own so much. So, Prabhupada, he really wanted that something should be done. Of course, in Mayapur, he said eventually there will be millions of people coming to Mayapur and then someone could just sit there and preach. But Prabhupada had a particular vision that he wanted something done in ISKCON. He wanted us at least to maintain whatever he gave us without changing it. And then he wanted us to expand it. So Haridas Thakur was able to expand this movement of Lord Chaitanya. He was able to bring people to devotional service, even who were hard nuts, who were real. Normally it says that if a person is very attached to material enjoyment, if they're very attached to wealth and fame, the resolute determination for devotional service doesn't come in their heart. It's right there in the in the Bhagavad Gita, the basic principle. The resolute determination doesn't come in these people's hearts. But Why would we read that? It's exactly a verse that says that. Because, why did this prostitute was converted? She's definitely a materialist. Because specifically by the mercy of Haridas Thakur. So there are some people who are very hard persons to bring around to devotional service, but sometimes just by a real association with a devotee, their heart changes. Sometimes the devotees are preaching and people are inspired to chant Hare Krishna, and they start to chant Hare Krishna, and then they start to surrender. And then some envious people criticize that, oh, what is that? That is not the quality of a Vaishnava. That doesn't mean anything. They're simply able to somehow or another inspire people to chant, or they might have some mystic power to just bring people around into chanting by some kind of, like, you know, mass psychology or something. And in other words, there are some people who, no matter what happens, they don't like to recognize a Vaishnava. And they're unfortunate. Their attitude is not recommended to others. The proper attitude is to see if anyone's being able to preach and do something, Jai Guru, Jai Maharaj, all glories to your service. This should inspire the other Vaishnavas. And when we have that Vaikuntha mood, where we see these good qualities, see the ability of some devotees to preach, we become inspired. We become purified, we become inspired, and everything starts to expand. We also can get those types of qualities. And by coming into some kind of an envious attitude, we don't want to recognize any Vaishnava, even if we're able to preach, even if we're able to do something, we want to say all Vaishnavas, those who haven't done anything, and those who have been able to do a lot, they're all the same. All these are kind of material conceptions. Prabhupada, Chaitanya Charitamrita, recognize someone according to what they've done. And encourage someone to do something. Encourage them to do something. Otherwise, we're encouraging people to do nothing and get credit for it. We should encourage people, go out and preach. Make people Vaishnavas. And all glory be to you if you're able to do it. Jai. That's what Haridas Thakur did, and therefore he was glorified. And if someone does it, we shouldn't be misers, we shouldn't say that, oh, this person shouldn't be glorified. We should glorify that person. If somebody's able to go into Africa, into very difficult situations, preach, and be able to make people into Vaishnavas, to chant, to give up their... I mean, in Africa, one of the habits they do is they cut the jugular vein of the cow and they drink them, they make a chutney out of the blood. I mean, they have so many horrible practices, you know, that were there. But those people become Vaishnavas, they become pure devotees. We should glorify the teachers if they're able to go in those situations and do that. Here in the Western country, the people are having abortions, they're having so many things. If they're able to make a person give up these habits. I mean, in Latin America, in some places where it's a little more promiscuous, when you tell people, in North America, there's not enough people to preach them, you see their reaction so easily. But there, when you tell people that there are principles, you get married, and then you have sex life and marriage, it's like they start to crack up. It's like a joke or something. I can't believe it. You know, why get married? You know, life isn't for getting married, it's for enjoying. And this is the thing in the Western world. People are so addicted to sense gratification that even marriage to them seems like some real, like a far out kind of thing that, you know, who wants to get married? I mean, that's like, those are like old fashioned things. Nobody did that anymore. So people have become so fallen. I imagine this is kind of a reflection more of the European attitude that, where it's become. We're able to convince those people to take up chanting and bring them around. I mean, isn't that something wonderful? In a sense, it shows that the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Haridas Thakur has been coming down. It's not a material thing to be able to convince people who are very addicted to sense gratification. The people in India, they recognize that. And the one thing, even if anyone ever preached to Indians, even those who are a little more sincere who are here in America, they will say that you have all the facility for enjoyment. But you've given it up for chanting, and they glorified it. And they glorified that somehow or another, Prabhupada, they're able to, by their preaching, to have the people give up these material enjoyments, which, you know, from the point of view maybe of someone in the third world, or, you know, a little materially attracted by the glitter of it, they think for them it seems like those are very big happinesses. Have unlimited wealth, or unlimited opulence, or unlimited comfort, unlimited sense gratification. And then have someone give that up and take up to devotional service. It's just like this prostitute. She gave up. She wasn't that just like a prostitute on the street. She's a society girl. She was like in the court of the Lord. She was like the number one, like practically like the mistress of the Lord. She was like one of the number one society girls. I mean, what they're considering a prostitute here, in the present day society, you would consider like a movie star or something. I mean, in terms of, wasn't that she was just, you know, they call it a call girl or something like that. I mean, she was just reserved for the upper, higher class. She was, you know, highly sophisticated in her situation, which is practically, you know, it's a lot of professional rock and roll singers who think they're not any different. And that was the kind of person, it was like making Madonna, I mean, practically Haridas Thakur, you know, it's like making Madonna, you know, a devotee or something like that. And what this prostitute was, the number one famous society girl in society at that time, the number one, therefore she took up the challenge, says, I'll break Haridas Thakur, I'll make him into a debauchee. And she went, she became converted, and she shaved up, and she's sitting there chanting Harinam, and people said, well, Haridas Thakur, he died. Right? Text 144. Any questions? Text 144. Ramachandra Kala Agete Polilo. Translation. By inducing a prostitute to disturb Haridas Thakur, Ramchandra Khan caused the seed of offense at his lotus feet to germinate. This seed later became a tree. And when it fructified, Ramchandra Khan ate its fruits. This is a very interesting concept. Just as we have a seed of devotion, that seed grows and grows. But here it says, Parada Beach, seed of offense. When we commit an offense against a Vaishnava, it's like a seed. And that offense starts to grow and grow and grow. It wipes out our spiritual life. Therefore, we have to pull out all the weeds, all the seeds of offense. In other words, it's not that if someone says, oh, you know, just make some Vaishnava parade, starts to, for no reason, criticize the pure Vaishnava. And then, immediately the person just like, you know, gets hit by lightning or died or something. Nothing, you know, it doesn't happen like that. It happens to seed. Alright, you commit an offense. So the seed, and then what happens to the person, then that starts to expand, the person becomes more envious and more critical and more bitter and more nasty and until finally just becomes an out and out like demon. Even as a nice Vaishnava, he gets implicated in offense, he gets the seed of offense, he starts getting that mentality, and it grows and the person gets totally wiped out. And this is what I mean, Ramchandra Khan didn't start from a very good position. He was already a materialist, but he wasn't a Vaishnava Bharati. But from a materialist, he became Vaishnava Bharati, and then you can see what happened. Mahat aparadir phala adbhutta kathan prastava paiya kohi suno bhakta gan. O devotees, please listen. This offense at the lotus feet of an exalted devotee has resulted in a wonderful narration. Taking advantage of the opportunity afforded by these incidents, I shall explain what. So Hajaya Vaishnava Ramachandrakan Puridashara Puradi Hailo Asur Saman. Ramachandrakan was naturally a non-devotee. But now, having offended the lotus feet of Haridas Thakur, he became just like a demoniac. Vaishnava dharma ninda kore, Vaishnava paman, Bhagavad-dhyayaner apadane paila parinam. Translation. Because of blaspheming the cult of Vaishnavism and insulting the devotees for a long time, he now received the results of his offensive activities. Translation. Because of blaspheming the cult of Vaishnavism, and insulting the devotees for a long time, he now received the results of his offensive activities. Purport. Ramachandra Khan was a great offender at the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas and Vishnu, just as Ravana, although born of a Brahmana father, Visvasrava was nevertheless called an asura or rakshasa because of his offenses against Lord Ramachandra Vishnu and Hanuman, a Vaishnava. So Ramachandra Khan also became such an asura because of his offenses against Haridas Thakur and many others. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, Prabhupada said that there are in the dress of Vaishnavas, there are many feelings in this Krishna conscious movement. Although they're dressed as Vaishnavas, they're actually demons, because their pastime is in criticizing Vaishnavas and insulting them. Now, this can be misused, that people, everyone's a demon or something. Then we're going to implicate it, whoever said that, then they get implicated in the same thing. It's not that everyone is a demon. There are pure Vaishnavas, there are advancing Vaishnavas, there are, you know, pure Vaishnavas in different levels, Uttam Abhyam, Kanishta, and there are neophyte people who are just innocent, they're learning how to become a Vaishnava, then there are materialistic people, and then there are actually demons, people who are actually, even they might have been Vaishnavas, but by this getting the seed of offense, they may be converted to actually become demons. Then they become separated from Krishna. The effect of offense is we separate ourselves from Krishna. Therefore, an offense is much more dangerous than a sinful activity. Sinful activity Krishna can clear out very easily. An offense is something very personal. It's very, very the spiritual sin as compared to a material sin. So it's a much more serious situation. Ramchandra Khan, he was a materialist. But when he started to offend the Vaishnavas, then it just like, it became like a, what do you call it, a spiral, a vicious circle. It got worse and worse and worse. Until he was actually considered asura, the demon. And if that's someone becoming, if you find sometimes in Satama, and all they want to tell you about is this devotee fell down, and that one had this problem, this one, and you go and you just spend about 15 minutes with the person, your brain starts to like, yeah, everything's bad, there's no pure devotees in the world. And God, it's better if I was in the material world. Yeah. And there are people like that. This aura is like, you know, it's like you have this aura around, envy vibe. And those are the kind of people that the Chaitanya Charitamrita says, don't even let the shadow fall on you. Don't be around such people. Because those people, they got so many seeds of aparadha in their heart that they're like, you know, there's like a jungle in their heart. Their consciousness is like, you know, beyond association. Unless someone's very pure and very, powerful, that they can cut through that kind of aparadha and get the person to get out of that. That person's like hitting in a spin. You know, one of those spins when you try to go up too fast in an airplane, you lose what they call your lift. And then you fall into an airplane can only go up, you know, at a certain angle. If you go beyond that, you need a certain forward velocity. So you go try to go up too far straight up, unless you're a rocket or something. I mean, an airplane is being lifted up by its wings. So you're going too far straight up, your forward movement is, say, maybe only 50 miles an hour. Like each plane, like a jumbo jet, if it goes beneath 160 miles an hour. It'll just fall from the sky. Then I have a disciple who's an engineer for Jumbo Malaysian Airlines. And he was landing, they were going around and around in London. There was a huge, you know, thunderstorm and lightning and everything. And on the computer said that they are going 200 miles an hour. But they weren't. Because of the wind or something like that, the wind from behind or something, their actual speed in terms of the wind, I mean, you know, it's like when you're in a plane, it depends on the wind. Their actual speed went below that 160 point. And it started to just drop right from the sky. And, you know, the pilots were like all spaced out, didn't know what to do, you know. And so he just like jumped in the seat and just, bam, the throttle, full speed. So, got it above the speed, and they had already fallen like, you know, like 1,000 feet in just a few seconds. You pulled out of it. So, anyway, that's an example. But, and just like a plane, if it loses its forward motion, it just starts to fall. A devotee has a certain momentum. And if you lose that, if we lose that spiritual asset, then we can just fall from the grace, so to speak. So we have to keep our positive devotional service going on. And we have to avoid all these kind of things which can drag us down, whether it's material weeds or whether it's spiritual seeds and offenses, which can grow and grow. And actually, the best way, because we don't want to discourage someone, even if they're already become a little critical or something, the best way of teaching them not to be critical when they get ignored. When nobody wants to hear their criticisms, when everyone's interested in hearing, you know, how to expand their devotional service, I mean, if someone's an authority and there's something that, you know, like a leader in the movement or a senior president and there's some authority has to be dealt with because he's a bad example, that's one thing. There's another thing where, like, something's already, a person's been tried, a person's been, it's been decided, it's infinite, the person's trying to retract himself, but people still go on like this, like relishing, talking about the misfortunes of different Vaishnavas in the war against Maya. That kind of thing, we're not interested in that. You can buy a Observer magazine with plenty of garbage, but we want to hear about how the Vaishnavas are conquering over Maya, how even though they get difficulties, how they're still in the fight, how they're still trying to advance, how they're still trying to make their spiritual life a success by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. We want to hear how we can expand our service, not how, you know, not other things. So by ignoring people that are too critical, then that go out, then they may see that, well, it's not the proper attitude. We're not discouraging them, we're discouraging them from criticizing. Of course, birds of a feather flock together, seemingly. Find a little conflicts, and those devotees simply want to advance in Krishna consciousness, they find their little conflicts, and those places become Vaikuntha, where there's not a lot of criticism, where devotees are more concentrating on their spiritual life. They become little oases of Vaikuntha. And many people have praised that our New Orleans and our Farm Project is like that. It's like a little oasis of Vaikuntha. And people are coming here because they find relief, it's a spiritual refreshing that people are just serious about advancing Krishna consciousness. And I hope that it remains like that always, so that, and surely every sincere Vaishnava then will be glad to welcome them into the community. Of course, we also don't want people to come in and with that kind of a bitter type of tamasic attitude. We'd like them to rather be purified by this positive engaging devotional service and trying to please Prabhupada. I mean, that's really what it's all about. So, it's about Nityananda.
Nityananda Gosari Gore Javiyari La Prema Gochari Te Tobe Pami Te La Dila.
When Lord Nityananda returned to Bengal to preach the cult of bhakti, love of Godhead, he began touring all over the country.
Prema Pracharana Pashanda Dalan Tui Karche Avaduta Korena Brahman.
For two purposes, to spread the cult of bhakti, to defeat and subdue the atheists. Lord Nityananda, the most dedicated devotee of the Lord, moved throughout the country. Thus, when Lord Nityananda entered the outside house, Ramachandra Khan was in the inside house with the members of his family. When Nityananda Prabhu arrived, Ramachandra did not receive him personally, but sent his servant to form him indirectly to go away. Sevaka bole goshani, more patai lokan, vihasir ghore tumai, devo basustan. The servant informed Lord Nityananda, "My dear sir, Ramchandra Khan has sent me to accommodate you in some common man's house."
Goalara goshala hoy, achanta vistar, ihasankirna stola tumar manusha apar.
You might go to the house of a milkman, but the cowshed is spacious. Whereas the space here in the Durga Mandap is insufficient because you have many followers with you.
Vitare achila suni, krode bahirila, atatahashi goshai, kohite lagila.
When Nityananda Prabhu heard this order from the servant of Ramchandra Khan, he became very angry and came out. Laughing very loudly, he spoke as follows.
Satya kome egor, mora chokhanoi, mlecha go baddha kore, thar jogahoi.
Ramchandra Khan has spoken rightly. This place is unfit for me. It is fit for cow-killing meteors.
Ato bole krode goshai uthiya cholila, thare danda vite se grame na rohila.
Having said this, Lord Nityananda stood up and left in an angry mood to chastise Ramchandra Khan. He did not even stay in that village.
Iha Ramachandra Khan, shevo ke agya dilo, goshai jaha bosila, tarmati kodailo.
Ramchandra Khan ordered the servant to dig up the dirt in the place where Nityananda Prabhu had sat.
Gomai jale lepila, sabamon virpangana, Prabhu Ramachandra Mona Nahoila Porasanam.
To purify the Durga Mandap temple and courtyard, Ramchandra Khan sprinkled and smeared it with water mixed with cow dung, but still his mind was unsatisfied. In other words, Ramchandra Khan became so envious because Nityananda, who came to his house, he thought, "He's contaminated my house." He sat there on the, he dug up the earth and threw it out, that even the earth was contaminated by this sinful presence, you know, sick of Lord Nityananda. This was how offensive Ramchandra Khan became. He could not even see that Nityananda Prabhu was so pure or great. Even Nityananda Prabhu was faultless. He thought that, "Oh, Nityananda Prabhu has come to my house, that now everything is spoiled. Nityananda is such a demon. This is a Ramchandra is such a demon that he thinks that, oh, Nityananda is a demon." So Nityananda said, "Yes, this is correct. This is not fit for me. It is fit for a meat-eating lecher." Those words have a great secret.
Dasu priti kore ramachandra rajare na deyakar kruta maya mecha ajir ailo taragor.
Ramchandra Khan's business was questionable. He tried to avoid paying income tax to the government. Therefore, the government's minister of finance is angry and came to his residence.
Asi se durga mandape basa koilo, abhatta bhatta kori mamsha se gori bartailo.
The Mohammedan minister made his residence in the Durga Mandap of Ramchandra Khan. He killed a cow and cooked the meat at that very place.
Sri Putra Sohita Ramachandir Bandhya Thargora Gamalute Tino Dinarohiyam.
He arrested Ramchandra Khan along with his wife and sons, and then he continuously plundered the house and village for 3 days.
Se gore tino dina kore ame thyo randan ardina sabaloya kore lagaman.
In that very room he cooked the flesh of the cow for 3 consecutive days. The next day he left accompanied by his followers.
Jati dana jana thane sakala loilo bahudina parjanta grama uchara rohilo.
The Mohammedan minister took away Ramchandra Khan's position, wealth and followers. For many days the village remained deserted.
মহান্তের অপমান যে দেশ গ্রামে হয়, একজনার দোষে সব দেশ উচারয়।
Wherever an advanced devotee is insulted, for one man's fault the entire town or place is afflicted.
Haridasa Thakur Choli Aila Chandrapure Ashiya Rohila Balarama Charya Gore.
Anyways, this is the history of Ramchandra Khan, materialist, puffed up, thought he'd made a joke on the Vaishnava, sent a prostitute to make him fall down. Then he got implicated in a fence. That offense grew so much that even though the greatest preacher, even though the personality of God himself, Lord Nityananda, came, he couldn't see any good quality in Nityananda. In other words, if somebody gets in his habit of Vaishnava Aparad, even if a pure devotee, even if God himself comes before such an offensive person, they'll still criticize. They won't be able to see the good quality. This is how dangerous it is to become a Vaishnava Aparad, to become someone who enjoys in offending Vaishnavas. So as a result, lost everything. Someone told me that, I don't know if it's true or it's an interesting point, that when Pontius Pilate said, washed his hands, and said, I don't want to do anything to do with the sin of crucifying this great devotee. And the Jewish priest there said, if you want it, the sin will be on you and on your descendants. I will let them do it. And he said, yes, we will take the offense on us and all of our descendants for the future generations. Someone said that that's why so many Jews were tortured and their daddies were tortured. That they actually took that sin of upon themselves. And here, if that were the case, this would confirm that that is actually a fact, that if you're committing an offense against a Vaishnava, not only oneself, but all of one's family members and one's associates, even they all get the effect. So suddenly we don't want to be implicated in any kind of Vaishnava Aparada. It is so serious that if anyone is connected with it, they have to suffer. Any question?
Yes. You said that there are different types of devotees, different types of devotees. And in that context, I remember that I read in the book of Paramita was kind of a Benares. Then I think it was not an issue to wear a Benares. And these guys, the Buddhist guys, is purely devotees, trying to punish the Anupas. So in most places, otherwise, you always read the Prabhupada's books that the punish the Anupas is not a pure devotee. That he is someone who does not really appreciate the devotees, just sees people, doesn't know anything about scripture, and fall down. But in this place, it's described that the punish the Anupas is purely devotees, so how is it?
Prabhupada explained that they're all pure devotees, but there's like three levels. I think that explained in that sense. There may be some Kanishadikaris who are also conditioned devotees. For instance, that Kanishadikari worshipping the Lord for the purpose of material upliftment. These Kanishadikaris, their only purpose was to achieve their devotional service. They weren't so advanced to really be able to recognize. In India, in fact, you can see in Bengal, there are a lot of Kanishadikaris, a lot of people who they actually say that I want to just get love for Krishna, I want to go back to the spiritual world, I want to get love for Krishna, I want to get the mercy. But they don't understand who is the Vaishnava, they can't recognize. They have faith in the deities, the temple, and the guru, and that's about it. These kind of devotees, I only follow my guru, and I don't recognize any other Vaishnava. That's a little bit Kanishka. Contamination. A little more advanced. Of course, you have to follow the spiritual master, but you can recognize that there are other Vaishnavas and then have to associate with them and respect, so on. So these were pure devotees, but because they were not very advanced, they became affected by the criticisms, or they became the they became confused and they couldn't recognize other devotees exactly very well, but they had implicit faith in Lord Chaitanya, had implicit faith in spiritual master, but they weren't themselves able to, they became a little affected when they heard the criticisms. They became like filled with doubts or something, insecurity. But in terms of their own personal desire, they wanted only to have pure devotional service, but they were not strong enough to be able, like I said, one of the different ways of describing, one thing is when a Kanista Adhikara hears an offense or hears some kind of a criticism, then he starts to doubt. And he gets put into that kind of confusion. But then, like, in his heart, he thinks that it must not be true, or there must be something, but actually they're confused. And then they go to the guru or some advanced person like Lord Chaitanya, and then they submit to before him, and they get their portion, and they get their doubt eradicated. Now, Madhyamadhikara means that in spite of hearing some kind of a statement or some being asked a question that they don't have the answer for, they never doubt. They're not even for a second, they don't doubt the slightest bit. They know that, alright, even I don't know, my guru knows, the answer is there, even if I can't, their faith is fixed. Although, they may not know the answer, therefore they're considered a Madhyamadhikara. And Uttamadhikara means that no matter what question someone gives, not only is he not at all bewildered, but somehow or another he's able to answer that question, he's able to establish a proper Vaishnava Siddhanta, and to dispel the doubts of the other people. So if somebody is able to preach and establish faith in people's hearts, dispel their doubts, to fix them in devotional service, then that person should be recognized as an Uttamadhikara, according to the scripture. And if a person preaches and he's always faithful, even though he's not able to always, you know, maybe like a real innocent kind of person, he can bring that person around and help them to advance, but like a real hard nut or someone that's a little, you know, not so easy to preach to, or you're not able to like answer all their questions or kind of dispel all their doubts, but they will give a good association, give them some good positive preaching, help them to advance, and that person never has any confusion or doubts about his duty or about what Krishna conscious, you know, basic principles and things like that. That's a Madhyamadhikara. And a Kanista Adhikara is a person, he's doing devotional service, he may be considered a pure devotee if his desire is to ultimately achieve a Godhead, to serve Guru and Krishna. But when he hears something, statement, some philosophy, he gets confused, he gets frustrated, he gets bewildered, and then, but in his heart he thinks there must be an answer, or still, you know, like still they stick it out, but like they're like confused and bewildered and so on. Is a Kanista. So these two devotees, they're definitely dedicated to Lord Chaitanya. They didn't want anything material for the devotion, so they weren't conditional devotees. But when they heard the criticisms, when they saw the obstacles coming, the preaching, they lost their enthusiasm, they became morose a little bit, they got a little like in the moj. Not that they wanted something else, they only wanted to, but it just like the opposition that came up had disheartened them, and they came to Lord Chaitanya a little frustrated because of that situation, and then Lord Chaitanya, he took the action of going to Prakashana Saraswati and so on. So you can see from that example that they are pure devotees, but the Kanista Adhikara is because they became disheartened, because they became confused and bewildered, where you know, like someone like Govinda Das or Lord Chaitanya or like Sanatana Goswami, something like that. I mean, they didn't become bewildered or they didn't lose heart or anything. Even if there was criticism, they couldn't care. I mean, there are other devotees who chanted Lord Chaitanya. They just went on. I mean, they were oblivious. But these devotees, maybe because they were, you know, for whatever reason, when they heard those criticism, they became bitter. So therefore, they were considered on a little lower level or a Kanishtha Adhikara level. Is that clear? Yes? Well, there's a verse, I forget where it is. Verse or letter? It's a verse, actually. The Prabhupada says that there can be a Uttam Madhyam or a Kanishta. Normally gurus are Uttam Adhikari, but sometimes they can also be a Madhyam or a Kanishta Adhikari. If he fully follows the Uttam Adhikari, previous Acharya, then he can deliver his disciple. because they're completely following. Otherwise, if he's actually good, he's taking the disciple to the Uttamadhikari, and in that case, they can get the benefit of the Uttamadhikari. But otherwise, the guru, on his own account, he cannot teach his disciple a higher realization than he has. So if he has a Kanishtha Adhikari realization or Madhyama Adhikari realization, that's to that level, his disciple can advance to that level. So that is why, see, like, in India, the system came where a person might be a guru, but when his disciple advanced to a certain point and initiating guru means he's also the Shiksha guru. It's not that he's, you know, he's also responsible for instructing. It's not just like he's like a formal, you know, just take initiation and that's it. But when he couldn't give his disciple, you know, enough advice or higher, then he would, the disciple may ask, or he might send him to another Vaishnava who has a higher realization and to accept that Vaishnava as a Shiksha Guru, and then after getting instruction and coming back to the Shiksha Guru. That's why you have this, like in Prabhupada's case, he said, I am your Shiksha Guru, I am your Shiksha Guru. No one needs to having Shiksha Guru as such, and there's like two types of Shiksha Guru. There's one is one who gives relevant instruction which helps you to advance in Krishna consciousness, and the other one who is not different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is directly represented. In other words, someone who's on the same level as Diksha Guru or on the same absolute level as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's actually, you know, a representative directly of the Lord. So it mentions that there are these two categories of Shiksha Guru. I'm talking about the second category, where one actually, because otherwise, I mean, in a general sense, anyone who gives a relevant instruction is a Shiksha Guru. So we respect everyone like that, but that's not the same when it says that Diksha and Shiksha Guru are one, and so on. It's specifically taught, it means the second one. That one doesn't accept such an absolute relationship with a Shiksha Guru, unless one has the permission of the Diksha Guru. Unless the Shiksha Guru should be in line with the Diksha Guru, with the, should be bona fide. So like Prabhupada, he said, I'm your Shiksha Guru, I'm your Diksha Guru, I'm everything. As far as that level of Shiksha Guru, I consider for my disciples, I'm both their Diksha and Shiksha Guru on that level. Unless for some reason there comes a time when I cannot answer the question, and then I may consider it to be someone else more qualified to answer. But so far, Prabhupada's mercy, I've come up with any questions like that. But there may be, I just can't know, you know, with the new situation, maybe that there'll be disciples who go to the new spiritual masters, and the spiritual master won't be able to tell them what is Vishishtadvaita or something, or what is a different, how to teach them. So you may have to say, well, you better go to Bhaktipada or to someone and then study under them for a little while and come back, because it's gone over my head, it advanced too far for me. Something like that. Or they'll have to go themselves and get trained up a little bit and come back and teach their disciples. Anyway, these are like all hypothetical things. Do you understand the basic philosophy behind it, principles? In one sense, that first type of Shiksha Guru is also considered, in other words, considered as a Bhagavan Pradarsha Guru. And in India, that first type of Shiksha Guru is considered as a Bhagavan Pradarsha Guru. And when people say that I have a Shiksha Guru, they don't, you know, I mean, like, if you just read your books, it's one thing, but I mean, if you see that what is the general practice, a person says I have a Shiksha Guru, it's like a formal thing. He's my, you know, it's like whatever he says, I'll do it. He tells me, you know, it's just like that type of relationship. Maybe the Shiksha Guru has passed away, and he has said the Shiksha, it's like, if you say that someone is my Shiksha Guru, it's like a very big thing, right? That it's, you just accept whatever they say as the word of God.
So in that sense, when the other type of relevant, you know, when the other Vaishnava, they tell them something, they don't accept them as their Shiksha Guru as such. They accept them as the Bhagavad Darshan Guru. But in a general sense, you could say it's that they're giving instruction. So from that sense, I would consider that the first kind of Guru is actually according to the, in that particular purport, it doesn't mention about any other, just talking about Shiksha Guru. And if you bring it into the light that there are five types of guru, and one of them is a Shiksha Guru, and there's a Bhagavad Pradaksha Guru, and there's a Sannyas Guru, and a Diksha Guru, and so on, then that type of Shiksha Guru could also be called as a Bhagavad Pradaksha Guru, because he's showing the way. But that a Bhagavad Pradaksha Guru is a category of Shiksha Guru. The definition is the same. For Ramakadashi Guru, someone who shows you the path. A little bit. And so there are two types of Shiksha Guru. One is the one who shows you, gives you relevant instructions, how to get there. So it's practically the same definition. So in a sense, one could, it seems that that particular verse is saying there's two types of Shiksha Guru. One is the Ramakadashi and the other is the Shiksha Guru directly representing. Although in some cases there may be even a more of a relationship than just Vartan production in that sense. But he may not be on that same level as saying he's a direct representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a realized soul. Normally one would use the term Shiksha Guru so lightly, as it's used sometimes in the Western world. The Shiksha Guru is really something more where there's much more of an ongoing relationship where someone's giving very important instructions. I mean, the general guidance that we receive, we either consider that, well, that person's a Vartman Pradarshan. We generally, how it's really used is a Vartman Pradarshan, say when you're just joining and someone preaches you on Sankirtan, or someone joining the temple and someone, first person you meet, they start preaching you. Generally, that's what I consider like Bhagavad Pradaksha Guru. He gave the first instruction to become a devotee. Once you move in the temple, the way Prabhupada told us to see it, with that all the people are preaching on behalf of the Guru. Now, of course, you know, that was the way Prabhupada taught us. Now, with the new situation, a lot of people are preaching on behalf of themselves. Who is really preaching on behalf of who, or whatever, you know. It was very clear when Prabhupada was present, he said we're all preaching on my behalf, preaching on behalf of the Guru. So, you know, now it's a new situation. But that was the basic thing that Prabhupada, out of justice, the present situation. That was what Prabhupada had given us, the system that all the devotees are actually preaching. Say if a person develops faith, or is developing faith in a certain person, and that person is preaching, that was the way it was presented before, he's preaching on behalf of the initiating spiritual master. That was the way the prophet also established things. So that way the disciple, he thinks of, well, I'm being trained. You say there's an authority, if he says that he may be a spiritual master, then he may tell other people who are Bhakta leaders, and more of that, how he wants people to be trained, and what are the basic instructions, and so on. So then they would be actually training new people according to the instruction of the spiritual master. Or in some situation, a person may be himself qualified to be a spiritual master, and then he's training people up. I mean, that's a little bit different. So in the one case, a person actually acting as a representative, the other time say one's acting as a representative of the Shiksha Diksha Guru. Another person is acting himself as a Shiksha Guru. In which case, the person may ultimately accept that person as a Diksha Guru, because it said usually people receive instruction from a person, they develop faith, and they may take initiation from that person. Or the person may decide to be someone else's initiating guru. For those other people, it's a Diksha Guru.